Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Troy Noons is an Absolute Podcast. I'm your host, as always, John Casillo, and with me today is Dan Lyons.
Hello, everyone. Happy back to football after bye week.
Yeah, this is the this is one of two podcasts you're getting this week. It's a bonus week for everybody. I don't know what order they're going to be in just yet, but they will be in some order. I can promise that. We'll also be giving you the customary basketball season preview, which will be largely devoid of jokes and garbage other than things that are relevant to basketball, which is, I'm sure, a blessing for everyone who might have tuned into last week's show.
Yeah, hopefully not too many jokes and garbage about what is a very unknown Syracuse team. But first, I guess this is kind of an unknown Syracuse team, too. I think we feel pretty good about them, but now the unknown is, what is the ACC?
The ACC is not exactly garbage. I feel like the Pac-12 is flirting with that this year. But it's getting close because we're really only about four teams deep, and Syracuse might be the fifth best team in the league, which is worrisome. And that's not even to hate us. That's really just to point out like how weird the league is this year.
Yeah, it's nice that like the Syracuses and Wake Forests and Boston Colleges are, you know, a good deal, it seems like a good deal better than they have been in recent years, and that like an NC State is finally like taking a step forward, and like there are teams that are doing good things. The problem is like you need Florida State to be you know, good, and they're just not. Like, they're just not a good team right now. That doesn't mean that Syracuse will just automatically go down and beat them, but FSU looks pretty weak. They just got pasted by Boston College last weekend.
They were miserable
obviously,
on Friday.
Yeah, really, really bad. Louisville has been kind of mediocre all year, and they're no bowl lock, even with Lamar Jackson putting up pretty crazy numbers again. Obviously, on the coastal side, it's kind of a mess behind Miami. The ACC, I think, has some good teams, but the only great teams, Miami is still kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say they're unproven, they're undefeated, but they feel kind of hollow as an undefeated team this far, and Clemson, while quite a good team, is obviously very vulnerable. So definitely a down year compared to what we've seen from the ACC last year and even the last couple.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I appreciate all like the, and everyone should appreciate, like, there's some cheerleading even from some of the Clemson fan base, but the Florida State fans and some others like saying like the more teams that are good in the conference, the better. It helps everybody. Problem is, like, yes and no. If everybody's good, that's fine, but like there still needs to be a better than good group. And it seems like the teams that are getting, you know, quote unquote good, us, Wake, BC, Virginia to an extent this year, some others, like, they're doing it at the like cost of, you know, Florida State, Louisville, Clemson to a lesser extent. And that's really kind of harming the top of the league. I mean, while I think that the floor for the ACC right now is pretty much as high as any other league in the country, the problem with that is that it's also hurting the ceiling. And I'm not saying I don't want Syracuse to be part of the upper echelon. I don't think Syracuse needs to lose for the ACC to survive or thrive. I think that there still needs to be a definitive bottom, and this is what happens. And, you know, this was kind of predicted a couple of years ago. This is what happens when you have, you know, just winning hires across the board. The ACC did a great job hiring 2 years ago when they had some turnover at SU and Virginia Tech and Virginia and a couple other places. And now this is the result of that, is that you just have, you have like a couple like maybe elite programs, and you have a lot of really good ones. And there's no real bottom, but that means that everyone can jump out and bite everyone on any given Saturday. And this was really, I mean, even before we got there, this was kind of the ACC's issue for a very long time, and why it was kind of under scrutiny for so long before we arrived, and the initial wave of expansion showed up back in 03 and 04.
Yeah, I think it's nice to have a deep league, or at least a league that's super competitive pretty much across the board. The problem is you run the risk of having no representation in the college football playoff, which the ACC has managed to do every year. And, I mean, that's the case for the Pac-12, which looks like it's in real trouble, and the Big 12.
And that's the case for them pretty much every year of the playoff so far.
Right.
You're too deep for your own good.
Right. Clemson hasn't, or not Clemson, the ACC hasn't really had a major issue with it so far. Clemson or Florida State's gotten in without much drama every year. So obviously Clemson still, you know, probably in the driver's seat for one of those four bids, but if they lose a game or if they, you know, drop, I mean, obviously Miami could do too, because if they win out, they'll be in probably. But, you know, if you have Miami drop a game and then beat Clemson in the ACC title game, which has to be on the table, then things get really sticky because there are, you have Notre Dame lingering out there as a potential 11-1 team that probably needs some help. But, the first chance of them getting in, I think, they'll probably do so if they have a legitimate piece. You have the SEC, which, I mean, I can't see Georgia losing until the SEC championship, and I can't see Alabama losing until potentially Georgia beating them. But even so, if you have a 13-0 Alabama and a 12-1 Georgia, both those teams might very well get in. So, and then, you know, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State are still kind of lingering. So it's not a guarantee that we just get a team in again if Clemson doesn't kind of return to form a bit. And they, you know, obviously won last week, but they didn't look, you know, superb doing it. So definitely a concern for the ACC overall. Syracuse beating Clemson certainly didn't help matters, but I think we'll all sign for that one. But, you know, all we can really hope, you know, I hope that we get a team in again, because I think it's good to be part of a league that is consistently there. But at the same time, I think foremost Syracuse fans are concerned about what we do in these last four games against opponents that now all look beatable and also all look like they could, you know, take Syracuse behind the woodshed.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's what I was getting into in that piece earlier today. And for those listening, we're recording this on Monday, which is different than our usual day. So forgive any past or future tense tomfoolery that happens to happen as a result. Yeah, Syracuse, as much as the path to six wins looks even more likely. I know Bill Connolly's numbers say it's a 65% chance now, which is even better than last week by about 8%. Problem is, though, as much as we're gaining chances from Florida State and Louisville not being as good as advertised, we're also losing a little bit from BC improving so much. So now we're in a place where there's four straight toss-up games instead of two sure losses and two, at least one sure win. Which, I mean, if you're viewing these all as a coin flip, it's 50-50. You could easily go 2-2. But unfortunately, we don't live in a world where these games are coin flips. You know, right now, Wake is seen, at least by S&P, as the 24th best team in the country. There's only a 40% chance of winning that game. I don't buy that necessarily. I think that's also a result of S&P just not really being high on our lack of efficiency, which is fair. I know with Florida State, that's now a 50-50 game. Louisville is very close to a 50, and no, that one's a little bit further. That's 36%. I still think that's probably closer to a 50-50 game. And then BC is drifting further and further down toward a 50-50 game. Was it like 82 or 84% about 3 weeks ago? And now it's down to 61%. Projected scoring margin is now 28-23 in favor of Syracuse. Right now, S&P Plus win probabilities say 5.87 wins for Syracuse. As the projection, so obviously we'd need to, you know, turn one of these, you know, 50% or so games into a win on top of the BC game, which right now is, like, again, it's at the top end of toss-up territory, but it's still very much in toss-up territory.
Yeah, I mean, we, like, half-jokingly talked about, I mean, probably not even half-joking, like, we had, like, a sarcastic tone, but also, like, discussed that BC had looked really, really good for a couple weeks, and then they went and beat Florida State by 32 points, which didn't really make it even seem all that crazy that, you know, Syracuse could play four really good games and potentially not win one of these, because BC, like, I think at this point you have to acknowledge what they've done. It's not just a one-game fluke or a two-game fluke. Like, they've waxed three teams in a row, or not, they didn't wax Louisville. They put on a lot of points on Louisville, and they just crushed Florida State. So clearly they have something going there, right in the time of need for Steve Adazio, who was, you know, pretty well on his way to flirting with the hot seat entering the year. And then Wake has just looked really, really solid. They're just one of those teams that plays its team every week, and they're not going to beat themselves. So they're, you know, a tough out. And Florida State's a mess, but they're super talented. And Louisville has the Heisman winner. So and they're also a mess, but, you know, Lamar Jackson has torched us. So, yeah, it's a precarious position. And it's easy to say, you know, it's nice that Florida State and Louisville look like games that Syracuse could certainly win. That's true. But BC and Wake, it was a lot nicer when BC and Wake seemed like, at the very, you know, at worst, you could, like, pencil in a pretty decent shot or win there, and that's still the case, but the road definitely looks more murky now, where we kind of knew where our chips were a couple weeks back.
Yeah, and I think, again, like, in some ways you do want to have a chance against every opponent. In that case, we do. But, yeah, in the other way, now we also have a chance to lose against every opponent where we probably didn't a few weeks ago. I think, you know, I mentioned this in the piece as well. Like, every year, you can probably bet on Syracuse to win four and lose four. It's what happens in the middle that really makes the season. Usually, those four opponents are going to stay pretty static. Instead, Syracuse turned Louisville and Florida State into, like, middle-class citizens on this schedule, while we instead beat Clemson. We turned Middle Tennessee into a loss and switched that out. So college football is rarely linear, but I feel like Syracuse is more predictable than most in terms of the results that you're probably going to be able to get. But, you know, maybe this season is the first step to many of proving me wrong there, as we now, again, kind of figure out. Right now, the second most likely win is Florida State on the road. Syracuse hasn't played as well on the road, though they have been competitive. Florida State's obviously more talented, even though they literally just gave up last week. We're in a weird situation now where, like, what do you want to take from that BC-Florida State game? Do you want to take the fact that BC was able to, you know, blitz Florida State pretty regularly, really get a lot of hits on James Blackman, generate some turnovers? They didn't really do much in the passing game. They ran the ball reasonably well, and they still won by 32. Like, for all these games, BC just hasn't really done anything crazy. They've just beaten teams, not at their own game, but they've just beaten teams playing a better version of what they have been for the last couple of years, which is at least a little unnerving for me as a Syracuse fan. I know you too. And then, you know, on the other side of that coin, though, is Florida State. Like, did Florida State give up? Were they really that thwarted by what Boston College was able to throw out there? Can Florida State really not move the ball like that? Because then in that case, I feel much better. But like you said right at the beginning, like, there's so much unknown here that I'm getting very, very nervous about what we're looking at.
Yeah, it's just tough because, like, the BC game is definitely, we've talked about it, it's just the one that you thought we knew we had. And just seeing them beat Florida State 35-3 is so disconcerting. Looking at the box score now, and like you said, it's basically the ugly Boston College offense that was, like, effective a couple years ago. Anthony Brown, like, he was 6 for 20, 54 yards. He did not really do a lot of damage in this game.
And you can't beat Syracuse doing that. Like, it's literally impossible.
Yeah, and Syracuse is a really good run defense, but when you can run the ball for 240 yards against a defense as talented as Florida State, like, while I'm pretty high on what Syracuse's defense has done this year, apologize for the dog running around here. Usually that's from the other side. Yeah, I'm at my parents' house, so he's just running amok. No, I mean, Syracuse's run defense has been fantastic this season, but Florida State has five stars all over the place, and you would think that they would have a better shot at holding BC down a little bit, and Boston College ran for 240 yards. So, yeah, it's a little scary. I think if BC is that one-dimensional, I still, you know, like SU's chances, especially at home where they've played better this year. But it just makes this interesting, and it's frustrating because this season would – it has been so fun in so many ways, and you've seen such stark improvements. To miss out on a bowl because, like, two other teams just happened to peak at the same time and got the best of us on one night would be pretty demoralizing. But obviously, we don't, you know, can't count those as losses yet either. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be nerve wracking, and hopefully Dino has some answers here.
Yeah, and I think you will. And, you know, if we're looking at these in terms of importance, I'd say this game to me becomes the most important right off the bat. I think it just sets the tone. I think while it's not, like, I think that the win over Clemson is the deliverance of the promise that Dino Babers talked about. This is taking that promise and turning it into more results. And obviously we said after the Clemson win, like, the Clemson win is step one. And it's a great first step. It's a key moment for the program. But let's wait to fully contextualize it and what it means and how important it is towards the end of the season. Because at the end of the day, if we go 5-7, don't make a bowl game, no one outside the Syracuse fan base is going to remember that win as much. You know, 4 or 5, 6 years down the road, recruits aren't either. They're just going to remember the fact that Syracuse didn't make a bowl game again. I think this Florida State game allows us to get to 5-4, 3-2 in the conference, and really give us a little more to play with, because, again, like Wake Forest and Louisville are the two least likely games, again based on the S&P Plus projections. The gulf between the most and least likely wins is not wide at all. But it is worth pointing out that, like, if you're going to grab a win here, like Florida State, again, second, a 50-50 shot right now, that would get us to 5 and give us 3 games to win 1 against these teams, which sounds a lot better than, you know, 3 games to win 2 toward the end. And I know that this is really just a semantics argument that's based on how the schedule shakes out, but, like, that's something that mentally factors into momentum, factors into, you know, your motivation. There's so much that goes into this, that getting that initial win, I think, tells this team that, hey, we can do it, we can close the season. And especially for someone like Eric Dungy, who is yet to play past the first quarter of any ninth game of the season at the collegiate level, this tells him that he has the confidence to get through the entire year. And I think he has that confidence, but it's one thing to believe it, you know, outwardly. It's another thing to mentally be able to internalize that feeling and be fully, you know, sure that you're going to be able to play a full season of college football.
Yep. And that's, I mean, I feel like we've been down this road a couple times now in recent years, and obviously it hasn't been with a team that's looked this good or a schedule quite played out this way. It's mostly been Syracuse is not doing its, you know, handling its business down the stretch, but I guess it's better than last year where things were, you know, the last couple of years where things have been kind of well accounted for. Obviously last year we were, you know, still in it after the Virginia Tech win, but things fell apart after that. But it's stressful, but I guess it's one of the nice things about college football, though, is that you almost always have something to play for unless you're just one of the absolute dregs, which we are accustomed to. But I'd rather be stressed out in heading into November than, you know, just trying to play off the stretch, I guess.
Yeah, same. I mean, last year we were kind of in a similar situation, 4-4. We got there a different way, but we were 4-4 at the break. Then we lost miserably to Clemson, and then everything just kind of went downhill from there. Obviously, this year's Florida State team is not last year's Clemson team, but a loss definitely wouldn't set us on the track that we needed to. And again, that doesn't mean we can't do it. We've been here. You know, we were, what, 4-6 the last time we made a bowl game, and then we won the last 2, maybe?
I have to look it up.
Yeah.
2013. I forget so much about the 2013 season.
It was a blur, because I tried to block out, like, definitive parts of it.
Because so much of it was so bad, and then a lot of it, you know, and even the wins were, like, just scraped together, and there was no real offense to speak of, so it was just kind of a weird, messy year. I'm looking now.
Yeah, I remember, like, I think I've actively deleted, like, parts of my own memory just to get rid of that Georgia Tech game and anything about it.
Yeah, the Georgia Tech game is, like, it's unfortunate that's, aside from maybe the bowl, that's probably still the most memorable game on that schedule. So they had the 2 opening losses to Penn State, which they should have won, and Northwestern, which they got beat up pretty bad. And then they beat Wagner and Tulane, and then lost to Clemson, beat NC State on the road, lost to Georgia Tech by a million, and then they beat Wake, beat Maryland, and then lost the next 2. So, yeah, they were at 4-6, so they were 4... they had to be 5-6 heading into BC.
Okay.
And they... Because that was, like, basically a... I think that was a play-in game, basically, for a bowl. I think BC was also 5-6. I could be wrong.
And that one, BC... That was the year BC was, like, actually, like, fringe rank. They weren't, like, top 25, they were close, I thought.
That was the year they had, what was the running back's name? Andre Williams?
Yeah.
And we shut him down.
We shut him down, and then we scored. We scored, like, at the end of the game to win.
Yeah. I was at that game, which was wonderful. Obviously, was that a Friday? No, that wasn't a Friday night. That was a Saturday.
I thought that was a Friday night.
No, it was a Saturday. I'm looking because it would no, it was the same day as the Iron Bowl, which happened like a little bit after.
I was watching the SU game on my phone, and then I remember like right after I looked up, like just as the kick six was starting, because it was like within minutes. I was out to dinner, and I was like, I was at a bar.
Yeah, I went to Fagan's and saw like maybe the last couple drives of that game. Yeah, so BC actually had been riding a four-game winning streak heading into the that game. They started out 3-4, and then they rolled off wins against VaTech, at New Mexico State, and then versus NC State, and then at Maryland before going to the Dome, and Syracuse put up the win with the rollout at the end, the tight end throwback, rather. So the BC game is probably the most notable. I guess that's about as memorable as the Georgia Tech game. But it was like kind of a weird year, despite being a rare recent bowl season.
Agreed. Definitely, definitely weird. Definitely kind of stuck in no man's land, you know, between the Marone era and the Babers era. You get that one year that Schaefer got to a bowl game, won it, and then we all thought Syracuse was going to go 8-4 the next year, which we did not. Definitely not ideal, but that's the past.
we didn't win 8 more games in his tenure, so definitely not quite what we thought. Oh well, I mean, we are now, and I think we wouldn't trade it at this point. So
this is true. Dan, why don't we do a little bit early halftime, and we can get to some more preview stuff for the good people.
Sounds good. I wasn't sure if we were going to do halftime this one or the next one. I guess
we could do it this one.
Cool. I actually have a bunch, so works out.
I do not have a bunch, so the floor is yours.
Okay. So I'm trying to think of where, okay. So I opened the week, I had some Innocent Gun. I don't think I brought that up last week. My days have kind of blended together because I had a long weekend out in SEC country. But I'm pretty sure I didn't bring up that last week. Just a solid standby. Whenever I find that, I enjoy it. And then this weekend I was down in Columbia for the South Carolina Vanderbilt game, visiting some friends. And we stopped over at River Rat Brewing, which is probably the biggest brewery in Columbia. And they have some just pretty generally good stuff. Their Kolsch is really good. They have a honey biscuit red ale, which is nice. Their Helles Bock is quite good. So, and that's just a really cool space if you're ever down in that town. Cool outdoor area. And then I had a couple other, I think I had some Westbrook down there as well. But yeah, just a pretty good overall weekend for some local ones from South Carolina, not up here.
Nice. And I'm glad you got surprised with an offensive showcase down there.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it was. There were some points. There were probably more points than you'd expect from those two teams, but it was maybe not the most exciting. They weren't sort of the most exciting fashion, I should say.
Fair enough. All right, on my end, I drink a ton. Like I said, I had on Friday, had a Midnight Autumn Maple from the brewery. Just a more aggressive version of their usual Autumn Maple Dark Ale, brewed with yams. I was at a wedding on Saturday night, so I just stuck to a Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. I was up in Pasadena yesterday, so checked out a Careful With That Passion Fruit Eugene from Beechwood Blendery. Just a lambic. It's pretty good. And then during the World Series last night, had a Celebration from Sierra Nevada, and then a Beechwood Foam Top. So, again, not a super exciting weekend. I'll have plenty more next week. One of my buddies is in town, so we'll be touring the local scene, as it were.
Nice. I actually forgot one. I had the Catawba White Zombie, which is a white, as you'd imagine. Pretty good overall. You know, a really solid white. Nothing too crazy, but very refreshing and tasty. So throw that one in there, too.
We'll make a note. So, Dan, looking directly at this Florida State game, which, again, I think is critically important for us, what do you see from this Seminoles team in terms of what they can do to Syracuse on the offensive end? Because it hasn't looked like they've been able to do much, though they did manage at least something against Louisville recently.
I just don't want to underestimate them because they are so talented. And Florida State probably fields one of the five, I mean, just total roster talent, behind maybe just Alabama and Ohio State and maybe a couple other schools like on a year-to-year basis. But if you're taking like rolling recruiting rankings, I think it's
Florida
it's
State
probably
definitively third at worst.
Yeah, it's probably Alabama, Ohio State, and then I would say it's hard to come up with someone else besides Florida State there. And there's, you know, on a year-to-year basis, maybe you have like one of the Texas schools or another SEC school hopping up there. But Florida State is consistently a top five recruiting team. Their talent, their roster is stocked with talent. I think any notion that Jimbo Fisher should worry about his job, even though the season has been a disaster, is ridiculous. He's a national championship winner. He is a, you know, places pretty much every big quarterback that plays for him in the NFL and for reason. So they're a horrific disappointment this year when they entered with national championship aspirations. But like, I just, nothing in this game would shock me, because having lost to BC by 32 and that you know, that's really the only super jarring result on its own. To be honest, like losing to Louisville, while Louisville is also kind of a mess, Lamar Jackson's really good, and like he can beat a lot of teams by himself. And losing to Miami, like literally everyone who's played Miami's lost to them. Losing to NC State, like, that's a really good team. Alabama, obviously, is the number one team in the country. So you take these like as individual results, and you get them, considering the Florida State lost its quarterback. Like, this is a really brutal schedule. But they didn't look good against Wake Forest, and I know Wake's solid, but you would think that Florida State would be able to do better than one touchdown win there, even with the best Wake team in, what, like 7 or 8 years. They only beat Duke, who's middling at best, by a touchdown, and those are their two wins by a total of 14 points. So it's tough to like totally write them off, because the losses they've had are to some really good teams, or at least, you know, three really good teams: Boston College, which is all of a sudden an enigma, and Louisville, which has the defending Heisman winner. But at the same time, you know, they're clearly not coming to play every week, and you don't know what the motivation is, because at 2-5, like you think that they would want to battle back and win three of these next four or four of these next five and get to a bowl. But actually, no, they need to sweep, right?
Yeah,
they lost a game, so they have to sweep, which includes winning at Clemson. Yeah, so you'd think that would be a motivation, but for a team like Florida State, like, does going to another bowl mean that much to them? I honestly don't know. I assume there's some kind of a pride thing, but like, I don't know that that even a 6-5 Florida State team is going to be like super motivated to play in like whatever, you know, third tier ACC bowl game they would get to.
No, probably not. And they're a pretty young team too, so it's not like it's not like it's like loaded with seniors who are sitting there going like, oh man, it's my last shot to like do whatever. Like you guys already did plenty.
Yeah, a lot of these players have, you know, played the biggest stage. I'm trying to think back, like, the date wise. I don't think anyone on this team would have won a national championship. Maybe was 20.
No, that was, I mean, any seniors would have.
Were they on that team?
Yeah, because 2014. Because a redshirt senior would have been on that team. They would have.
That's
played.
What I'm saying.
Yeah,
it was it had to be a 5th year senior. So someone redshirted or someone who got like a weird, you know, medical redshirt at some point, which I don't know what the case is there. Part of me thinks that maybe we should have seen this a little bit quicker. Like, I kind of bought on the national championship hype heading in, because I'm a big fan of DeAndre Francois.
I was all aboard.
Yeah, he's great. But when you take him away, you have a team that has a super talented 5-star running back in Cam Akers, but Dalvin Cook, like, you don't just replace Dalvin Cook. The receiving core was shredded from last year. I think they lost 4 of their top 5 guys, including, you know, no superstars in that group, but Travis Rudolph was a really, really good college player. Bobo Wilson was really solid. Kermit Whitfield, solid. Cook was a dangerous receiving threat out of the backfield. So it wasn't like whoever the backup was going into with this really proven, experienced squad. Like, it was a lot of talent at receiver, but not a lot of existing production. And when you don't have for lack of a better phrase, franchise quarterback there, it makes it hard for that group to develop. So maybe this was something that we could have seen happening if Francois got hurt. Even if he was healthy, maybe this was a team that was destined for like an 8-4 year where, you know, they could pick off anyone, but things weren't quite gelling yet. But now, I mean, it just seems like kind of the sum of all fears with how things have played out.
Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of where Louisville's at, too. Like, Florida State's obviously more talented, but, you know, offensive line problems are offensive line problems, as we know. And we also know, you know, in recent years, Eric Dungy, for us, has been able to make up for a lot of issues in the trenches and in the run game and then help gloss over some problems. Now, when you have, you know, an elite, more talented team, you should be able to gloss over those issues even easier with a backup than we can, but nothing's looked okay. I think, you know, Jimbo's gone the super conservative route with Blackman in there, and I don't think that's a bad idea, but at the same time, like, it's obviously not working. The defense finally fell apart. I know that that Charles Kelly, it seems like he's been demoted as defensive coordinator. I know I've seen, like, some
murmurs. I saw that. That would, I don't think that's been made official, has it? I've been kind of like off the grid.
Yeah, I didn't really see the official, but
that'd be weird. Just like Charles Kelly's kind of
that's not
the
problem.
Yeah, no, it's the offense. The offense is ranked, I think I saw 110th in S&P, which is nuts. I get it. Like, I get Jimbo trying to keep it conservative for Blackman, but it's not like you can. It's not like you can just run a freshman quarterback out there and, you know, say just don't lose the game when you are running out a lot of freshmen. Receivers and a running back and a offensive line in shambles. Like, it wasn't like he was surrounded by guys and he could just go kind of play his game and learn on the fly. He has to be the focal point of the offense going in when he did not expect to play this year. So,
right, he's got to be able to lift these guys up the way that Francois was expected to lift them up, because, like, the running back situation, to be honest, I, like, with Jock Patrick and Cam Akers, like, I was expecting a hell of a lot more from them, even with the struggling offensive line. Because, I mean, the offensive line was bad last year, too. I mean, look at how many times Francois got hit. But I just never expected it to bottom out like this. And, like, the run game, I mean, last week against BC was non-existent. Like, Akers was shut down the entire night. And as a result, like, everyone just keyed in on Patrick. Not on Patrick, excuse me. On Blackman. And, I mean, he was sacked, what, like, 7 times? Something like that. Like, BC's a very good defense, but they shouldn't be so good where they were able to outweigh the talent level to that extent and render them and render Florida State completely, like, useless on offense.
Yeah, I think we're going to probably see a similar game plan to what we saw against Clemson, which also has an iffy offensive line. Obviously had a hobbled Kelly Bryant. Blackman is healthy as far as I know, but he's not as experienced or as effective as Kelly Bryant. And his sack rate is pretty bad for, I mean, it's not all on him. You have a freshman quarterback who, you know, doesn't have, like, the full pocket presence that a junior or senior would have, plus a mediocre offensive line. I think he's getting sacked over 10% of the time. So I could see us kind of teeing off as we did against Clemson, where obviously the defensive line just put on a absolute show. And we're probably the most aggressive that we've been in the Bama's era by far. So I think we might have the blueprint as to how Syracuse is going to handle this game there.
Yeah, which would be great. And if what Dino was saying today, that Kendall Coleman's going to be back, that's even better. Because as good as the pass rush has been, I think Alton Robinson's been a big part of that, along with Chris Layton, obviously, up the middle, is having Coleman and having another, you know, fresh pair of legs to throw in there. Could be critical against a team like Florida State that's going to be able to really exhaust those defensive linemen for Syracuse.
Yeah, I mean, defensive line is definitely a spot where I'm not going to ever complain about getting another guy back, even if, like, you have been rolling with the guys you have, because you can always, I feel like you can always find a spot to get some guys, some rotation snaps and some fresh looks and different looks for the offensive line, especially a young one like Florida State's. So Coleman being back would be a pretty nice. I don't know if it's unexpected, but I don't know that we knew exactly when he'd be back. So if he is, does play against the Seminoles, I think it'd be a pretty nice thing for this defense.
Agreed. And since it doesn't seem like Josh Black will be back, based on Dino Baber's comments today, he mentioned Coleman. He didn't really mention Josh Black. So I'm assuming that Black still is a couple weeks out. At this point, I feel like, I mean, let's see what happens against Florida State, but I feel like if Black just can't make it back by, like, the Wake Forest game, maybe we think about just, like, seeing if we can get the medical redshirt there. I mean, Black hasn't played since, what, the second game?
It's been a while. I don't remember exactly how much, but unless it, I mean, it feels like it hasn't been the, was it four games? That's the upper limit. Yeah, so yeah, I think you obviously want him in there if you think he can help get to the bowl, but you again, you always have to weigh whether it's worth it when you could possibly get another year of eligibility, which would be huge.
100%. That kind of leads to the other part of this unfortunate injury conversation. While Syracuse is fairly healthy, all things considered, there are still players that are not present. Antoine Cordy is officially out for the year. It seemed like he just wasn't progressing at the rate that he needed to, and maybe, you know, Babers did a little bit of that math too, saw what's coming in and what was needed and what's needed from Cordy and how he can be more, you know, helpful to the team and for his career. And it seems like he'll be out for the year. He'll probably get a sixth year of eligibility, which means he'll be able to play in 2018 and 2019, which would be huge for Syracuse, and I think would actually give them a really deep and really experienced secondary for the next 2 years. And then I know, unfortunately, Jordan Martin will be out for the rest of the season, and that sucks for him for many, many reasons, but notably because, you know, he's pretty much done now. He played, you know, more than half the season. This was his grad transfer year, so unfortunately, that's unlikely that they get him back unless, you know, they make a bowl game. And didn't really seem like Babers expanded upon what Martin's ailment was. So, you know, maybe it's bad enough that he'll miss November, but not bad enough that they'll have to miss the bowl game too.
Yeah. It stinks for both of them. Obviously, Martin, it probably means his college career is over, which is really unfortunate, and he's been a nice player for us. Cordy, like you said, has been great when he's healthy, and it's really unfortunate that he's had another year end this way. Luckily, I mean, I think Syracuse has done a pretty nice job of filling in for these guys when they've gone down in the secondary. We've seen a pretty stark improvement from them overall. We've obviously had a lot from Christopher Fredericks and some of the other guys in those spots, so hopefully there isn't a huge setback, and it's been a couple weeks since we've had Cordy. But it just stinks when anyone misses out on the year with anything, especially I feel for Martin, because this, you know, probably think you, you know, have a real shot to make a nice, you know, have a nice finish to your college career here and make your mark in a bigger league, and to have it end halfway through is tough, but hopefully he has a good rest of his year at SU and a solid experience away from the field, at least.
Agreed. Best of luck to Jordan in his recovery. But, Dan, I guess wrapping us up here, meander there anyway, how do you see this one going? Obviously, we said there's a lot of questions, there's a lot of uncertainty for both teams. What do you see Syracuse being able to do or not do against Florida State?
Just looking at everything these last couple days, it was pretty crazy. I think the opening line came out at 2.5, but I think some places it's been moved all the way to an even line. I have to double check that. But seeing Syracuse basically in a spot where Vegas and the bettors believe, or at least the bettors based on their trend so far, believe that Syracuse would be a favorite in a neutral field against Florida State is pretty crazy. Overall, I think I'm just going to go with, I don't think I've chosen Syracuse to win a game in a while here, and they keep on doing it. I think I might have chosen to beat Pitt. I probably did, but yeah. I certainly didn't choose them to beat Clemson, and they did. And I didn't choose them to beat Miami, and they really came very close. So I'm going to use the logic of Florida State is super talented, and they're at home, and it just, like, I still can't quite believe that this would play out this way. So I'll take Florida State in a very close one. I'll go, I don't know how many points they'll be able to score with the offense that they're fielding. I'll go Florida State to win 20-17. And I welcome me being wrong again. I think that would be great.
Same. So I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm picking Syracuse here. I'm going something like, give me 23-17. That seems a little ridiculous, sure, but give me 23-17. I think Syracuse defense shuts down Florida State as they're driving at the end. A nice stand for them and a nice boost of confidence going down Tallahassee and grabbing that win. I think that Syracuse offense is going to be significantly slowed down, especially early if they start slow against Florida State's defense, which might be a little more recharged, perhaps under a new coordinator. Kelly will stay on staff if he is indeed demoted. So who knows how much really changes in just a week. But I think that, you know, if Syracuse plays the way they did early against Miami, I think that's cue for disaster. The only problem that Florida State would have in that situation is that they don't have the pieces right now on offense and the ability to stop Syracuse's pass rush the way Miami did. So, Miami played us tight, and they obviously, you know, took advantage of some of the mistakes, but, like, they had the offense that was able to do that and test us, and I just don't know if Florida State is going to be able to have that big play option anywhere on the offense to take advantage of that. So I'll give Syracuse the advantage here, and again, I'll say 6 points, but that could very well prove to be pretty dumb. And I could see Syracuse, I could see Syracuse doing anything between losing by 2 touchdowns or winning by, I'd say 6 points is my max, to be honest.
Yeah, this is one of those where I really feel like if you just took all the names and branding off the jerseys, I think you look and you just like Syracuse a lot, but it's just so hard to go out and feel super confident about them against a team with the talent of Florida State, even if Florida State has been kind of a tire fire. But nothing would really surprise me. I don't see Syracuse blowing out FSU. I don't really see Florida State blowing out Syracuse either, but, like, anything within, like, a 2-touchdown range for either side, I feel like wouldn't be that crazy. Which, again, considering the history of this Florida State-Syracuse matchup in the ACC, I know we had the one close game where A.J. Long was doing some stuff, but
we still lost by, like, 20.
Yeah, I think we still lost by 20, and it was, like, considered, like, oh, yeah, we kept it kind of close, I guess.
Schaefer era.
We were in it into the third quarter. I guess that was nice. I mean, considering all of the other games besides that one, which is the lone, like, not even bright spot, but, like, we looked vaguely competitive for a minute. Every other game has been an absolute rout. So going down to Tallahassee and putting forth a really competitive effort, I think it'd be tough to, like, paint this as a moral victory considering Florida State's 2-5, but it might be one where we can look at it afterwards if we end up clinching a bowl and saying, you know, oh, we played Florida State tough and we, you know how talented they are. That also might be a tough sell for, like, the average college football fan who might know Florida State, but if you're looking for reasons to discredit what Syracuse is doing, losing to a 2-5 team probably wouldn't be ideal, even if, you know, it's tough to just take these things out of context.
Oh, yeah, and you said, you know, like, Dungy made some mistakes at the beginning of that game last week, but some of them were actually avoidable. Two of them were not even his fault. If we could just avoid, like, throwing directly into Derwin James' hands, that'd be great.
Yeah, Derwin James is still there.
Yeah, he's still there. It's easy to forget.
One of the best players in college football. It's unfortunate that his talents are being wasted on the year they're having right now, but he is we hadn't mentioned him, so he probably deserves at least, like, a minute or two in this podcast. He's absolutely nasty. I don't really know off the top of my head what he's been doing this year because Florida State's been kind of buried since the Alabama game, but, he's an All-American player. He's going to be, I imagine he'll probably be a first-round pick. He's just a do-it-all superstar player, so don't want to give him any reasons to show out this weekend.
Yeah, I guess the one good thing is that I feel like the only time Dungy goes deep has been, like, with one-on-one matchups against corners.
I can't imagine James going to get, like, a one-on-one matchup with Ishmael. Right. Like, that's not really his role. He kind of, he's, like, all over the field. I don't like the Tyrann Mathieu comparison in terms of, like, the way they play. Derwin's, like, 6 inches taller and goes into the box a lot more, but, like, that kind of versatility. You'll see him line up on the edge, you'll see him line up at linebacker, you'll see him at safety. I don't think we'll see him one-on-one with Ishmael unless they feel like they just absolutely need to erase him from the game, but it's not like they don't have other capable defensive backs who will get that call, so it'll be interesting to see how we attack him and how we handle him overall, because he is just, you know, so clearly the leader of this team, and I'm sure if anyone really is going to be motivated for this game, it'll be him.
Yeah. No, I completely buy that. I think, you know, James is someone who can take away the play over the top, but we also don't really try a lot of plays over the top. This year's team is different than last year's team because, like, Ahmed Atawa, you were able to just, you know, send him streaking down the field, and he largely was going to have this big size advantage. And, like, Ishmael can go up and get a ball, but Ishmael is so much better in single coverage and, like, than he is necessarily in crowded space. Edetawo was able to make things happen in a crowd. that Ishmael just isn't, and that's not a bad thing for Ishmael. He's just a different type of receiver. I think he excels along the sideline better than Edetabo did. Both of them can be a little bit shaky hand-wise. I think that Ishmael is a better route runner, but I digress. I think we're going to see very minimal single coverage options for him against James or otherwise this weekend. But as we've discussed before, that opens up opportunities underneath for Irvin Phillips. That opens up some stuff for Ravion Pierce, assuming we're running the ball as well as we have recently. That could open up, you know, something for, like, maybe we get Sean Riley involved again. Devin Butler's shown himself a very capable complement to, you know, Steve Ishmael on the outside. So maybe we're using Ishmael as a way to draw a double team on one side and then seeing if we can beat single coverage on the other with Butler. Like, there are a lot of things we can do here, and you know, most teams can do a lot of things, at least try a lot of things against a team like Florida State to try to minimize the impact of James. But I'm hoping that at least if Ishmael – I don't want us to try to force something into Ishmael that ends up causing what would – again, the type of disaster we saw last week. I guess not last week, but 2 weeks ago against Miami.
Yeah, I think those are really good points. Obviously, Ishmael – again, we'll be down not quite as close to his hometown at Miami, but he'll be in Florida for the second time in 3 weeks. I'm sure he'll want to put forth another big performance after, you know, he hasn't really been slowed down. Obviously, there have been, like, penalties and some other things, but he hasn't put up the same exact gaudy numbers that he was earlier in the season. Not that he hasn't been incredibly effective in pretty much every game this year, but I expect that he'll want to do some damage in Florida State as well.
Yeah, I mean, not like he cares about his All-American status, but I would say that that is that's hanging in the balance a little bit right now based on some recent production. I would say that if he wants to get back in that conversation for the full-season All-American, a nice, like, 6 or 7 catch day against Florida State would go a long way towards that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much national attention we'll see in this game just because Florida State is down, but I think anytime you torch the Seminoles, it can't hurt, so... it would be cool to see Ishmael kind of push for third team recognition on some of these sites, and publications, because, I mean, he's had a heck of a year, and it'd be nice to see him roll into NFL draft time with kind of the same accolades that Amba was getting. Obviously, it didn't work out where Amba got drafted, but Ishmael also has more than just 1 year of impressive play, so right. It would be nice to get those things to go along with at least 2 more wins.
Too true. That's a good place to stop us, Dan. I feel like we actually dove into this Florida State matchup quite a bit, and I hope that hope Syracuse decides to. They're not going to be able to do what Boston College did, just differing styles of play and all that. But I do hope that we're able to put on a nice show and hopefully get to 5-4.
Yes, let's do it up.
All right, that was Dan. I'm John. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Troy Nunes is an Absolute Podcast. You can be sure to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, on Blog Talk, and go Orange.
Go Orange.